This is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 1027 in Johannesburg and Fine Music Radio in Cape Town.
The PGM market, as we know, has been on a tearaway over the last 12 months after several tough years for shareholders. And despite much good news already being baked into share prices, Amplat still kicked over 4% today after reporting what was, in most respects, a record year for the PGM giant. So bear with me as I go through all of it, as it makes for very impressive reading. PGM production of 4.4 million ounces was really in line with guidance. And despite all of the headwinds that we saw, there were robust PGM fundamentals, a 27% increase in the US dollar basket price and a 38% increase in the rand basket price. We saw record earnings before interest, tax, depreciation and amortization. EBITDA more than doubling to 30 billion rand. Return on capital employed increased to 58%. A really strong balance sheet. We saw Amplat generating operating free cash flow of 16.9 billion, further strengthening the balance sheet to a best ever overall net cash position of 17.3 billion rand. That's compared to 2.9 billion rand net cash during the prior period. And all of this resulted in the mother of all payoffs for shareholders. We'll recall in February last year, Amplats approved an 11 rand 25 per share payout. That was the largest in 10 years, having just resumed the dividend. And it then decided to hike the payout ratio to 40% of earnings. Well, that was dwarfed by the publication of today's numbers, in which Amplats unveiled a final divvy of 11.2 billion rand. It's equal to just over 41 rand, 41 rand 60 exactly a share, and a special dividend of 25 rand a share. It's first since 2001, taking the total divvy to 52 rand 60 per share. What a way to sign off. Chief Executive Officer Chris Griffith, zero fatalities on top of your best ever financial performance. It really doesn't get much better than that, but that key element is zero fatalities for an industry that has been aiming for zero harm the first time in the company's history. How did you manage that?
Michael, thanks for that fantastic introduction. It really has been a super set of results. But you're absolutely right, just to say, to sign off record results like that, knowing that every single one of your employees went home to their families, is just a great way to really know that you're making progress. So the question is, how did we do that? And I think it's been just incredibly hard work over many years. And over many years, we've seen every single year a reduction in the injury frequency rates and reducing the amount of fatalities. And that's come from real engineering solutions to some of the challenges facing us in mining, but then also a different culture in the way people think about safety and the way we want people to think about being safe, not because the boss says so, but because I want to go home safely to my family. So I think it's a combination of those two things and really, really hard focus work over a sustained period of time, learning from everyone, learning from our major shareholder, learning from the industry. Many different types of solutions have contributed to this achievement.
And I think, Chris, many businesses could be found guilty of PR or spin or greenwashing certain issues. But when it comes to safety in the mining industry, I think I can certainly say unequivocally that whenever I sit down with a mining executive, it is 100% genuine concern and hard work and effort to get to these kinds of figures. So a real congratulations all around from the management all the way down to the very most junior worker there. As a business, you've recorded your best ever financial performance, and you are stepping down on the back of these results. You've been at the helm for the last 7 years, so a fantastic turnaround job, because it wasn't like that. Certainly the macros in the industry weren't like that when you took over from Kumba, where you did a great job turning that around as well. But the bottom line is that were it not for load shedding, these results could have been much better.
Yeah, we could have added another 1.5 billion rand worth of revenue to the business. Government could have added another 500 million rand of taxes to the fiscus. So absolutely, load shedding is hurting the business. I think for the majority of our business, though, we last year were able to, and over the last few years, have been largely able to manage the load shedding by taking the load cuts in our smelter operations. And that means we can keep the mines producing, and at some point in time, we'd be able to get that through the processing. So the 89,000 PGM ounces that we effectively lost from processing last year are not entirely lost. And hopefully, if we get enough, which in itself could be a challenge, but hopefully if we get enough runtime from Eskom this year, we should be able to continue processing that material.
Now, Chris, the big question for investors as well was going to be your future expansion. What are you going to do now that you're producing such healthy levels of free cash flow, whether or not you're going to perhaps loosen the purse string somewhat, and what your investment decisions and plans are, particularly around the expansion of Mogalakwena. Can you just shed some more light on that?
Yeah, so Michael, we certainly are not driven by these level of prices to quickly rush out and do some sort of expansion or some sort of M&A. So the cash that we have and are generating is not burning a hole in our pocket. A number of years ago, we decided that we believe the market now was ready to be able to accept more metal, because the previous few years when we were in oversupply of the market, that wasn't what the market wanted us to do. Now, a couple of years ago, certainly not anywhere near these prices, we started doing the homework around the expansion of Mogalakwena. That work will continue, and hopefully in, say, the next year or so, we should be able to make a decision one way or another as to what level of expansion we're going to pursue. So I think very importantly, we're not letting this price environment rush us into making hasty decisions around the expansion. In the meantime, we continue to invest our capital in the business, sustaining the business. Thereafter, we pay the 40% dividends to shareholders. So I think the message to shareholders is they come first before a number of other options. And then the cash that remains, we will look at options like some of our fast payback projects that are generating lots of value, not chasing volume, and then some of our expansion options. But in the environment like this, for example, when we're generating excess cash, we're able to return that cash to shareholders. So I think the message to shareholders is that we're not being silly in this kind of environment. Mm. And if we don't have something to do with the cash, we'll return it to shareholders.
That's very sensible, Chris. It's environments like that that tend to breed hubris, particularly in the mining industry. Take the prices at their record levels, extrapolate them out over the next 10 years, and we've seen how that can certainly end up in tears. Just at the fundamental level, what do you see as the major driver driving the squeeze higher in the PGM market at the moment?
So without doubt, Michael, it's the real fundamentals that are driving. So it's not speculation, whilst there might be some of that around the edges, in particular around palladium and rhodium. So that's largely been driven around the automotive market, and it's been driven by ever-tightening emission levels. So regulators and society putting more pressure on governments and companies to reduce the amount of emissions that are coming out of, in this case, automobiles. And the way to solve that problem is you use more palladium. If it's a gasoline vehicle, using more palladium and rhodium, and if it's a diesel vehicle, using more platinum. And it's this ever-increasing drive to reduce emissions that is driving higher loadings, in particular so at the moment in China and India. And that's what's increasing the amount of vehicles being sold, but also higher loadings. Mm. And it's that at the moment that's driving more demand than the industry can supply. And for that reason, we've had deficits for a number of years. And going back a few years, we were able to supply, or the industry was able to supply, a lot of those deficits from above ground stock, including ETFs, that in palladium's case were around 3 million ounces a few years ago. And those have been whittled all the way down to about 600,000 ounces as that metal has sought to fill that hole in the market that demand has been greater than supply. And as that metal has been, the ability to fund those shortfalls has been reducing, so you've seen the prices rise. I think in the long term, certainly in the next few years, there is a readily available solution for this deficit in palladium and rhodium, and it's platinum. And platinum is in a surplus at the moment. Last year it wasn't, because there's a big purchase of ETFs, so investment buying of over 1 million ounces. So you can see the market's already anticipating that there's going to be a switch from platinum into the gasoline side. So it's really these underlying fundamentals, including as the world urbanizes and as the world grows its GDP, you're seeing increases demand in industrial uses. So these wonderful metals of platinum, palladium, rhodium, and some of the minor PGMs, they do amazing things for the world, and that's why they're in demand. And our view is that whilst you might see some more balancing between these metals, you're still likely going to see very strong demand for these metals going forward.
On that issue, Chris, of substitution and at what level it makes economic sense to switch from palladium perhaps into platinum, I've been told that it's very costly for the vehicle manufacturers to tool up, to change the metals between platinum and palladium, and it isn't just a question of flicking a switch. Is that some of the reason behind why we haven't seen that swing or that drive to substitution just yet?
No, Michael, I think we've passed that point a long time ago. So it's not a bit that it's not your first point was that it's very expensive to do that. But your second point is correct, is that it actually is not just a case of flicking a switch and I put more of a little bit of this as opposed to a little bit more of that. But the real challenge for the OEMs, so the automotive manufacturers, is that they've actually just had much bigger problems to solve. So post the VW scandal a number of years ago, what you saw was much more pressure on automotive makers to find vehicles that were electrified of some way, so either battery electric vehicles, hybrids, or fuel cells. And then on top of that, so the engineers have been busy doing that, trying to come up with those solutions. And on top of that, we've had the real-world driving tests and the CO2 emissions. So for those that are not deeply immersed in the market, what that really is regulators say that we are putting additional pressure on you to come up with more technical solutions around reducing the amount of carbon dioxide or just emissions in general. And so all the technical people at the automakers have been focused on that work, and that's just been much bigger issues for them than the substitution.
Ah.
So the cost of palladium and rhodium above platinum at the moment means that a vehicle will cost you about $200 more. Now, that's not really going to stop anyone from not buying a vehicle. So you can see that the automakers have had bigger problems to solve. They have been solving those, and they will get to this issue, our view, about 18 months to 2 years from now. And even if you decide, okay, I'm going to switch now, then your point that you made earlier is valid, is that, okay, then I've got to come up with the technical solutions around the mixes. I've got to then test them. I've got to have 100,000 miles on a vehicle to be able to prove that it works. I've got to then get regulatory approval. All that kind of thing will take about 18 months to 24 months actually before you see the real switching start taking place. So overall, I think you should expect a very strong fundamental demand for the basket of metals still going forward.
That's why René Hochreit was waxing lyrical around December of 2018 on the show about Amplats in particular. Listeners would have been well advised to be buying in at those levels. Chris, for you personally, signing off on such a high note, you announced today that you're going to be retiring after more than 7 years at the helm. Gavin Reilly, the former CEO of Anglo back in the day, always used to say, I think 7 years is about the right time to be CEO and then hand over to fresh eyes and energy. What did you enjoy most about your time at the helm, and perhaps what would you have done differently, if anything?
So, Michael, I think for me and the team, I think the turnaround from the early days where 50, 60% of the industry, and that included Anglo Platinum, was loss-making. You know, we had just been bailed out by our shareholders in 2011 with a massive rights issue of 10, 11 billion rand. And, you know, 4 years later, we were already on our way out of business again. We hit almost 15 billion rand of debt again in 2014. So this company was really going out of business. And the ability, the executive team with myself and the board, turning that around such that we, in just 5 years, have seen a 32 billion rand turnaround in the cash position of this company. You said in your introduction that we made a 17 billion rand cash position. I think all of that, but you know, it required very difficult things to do. We had to shut down mines, so we ultimately retrenched 20,000 people. We had to sell assets, such that now we've got a very, very, very different portfolio of assets that can see out any cycle. All of that, I think, collectively has been a career highlight for me. I don't think I would have done things differently. I think had I known some of the different things, I might not have been so bold as to take in some of those things on. But I think we had great support and we managed to do that. But ultimately, our biggest crowning achievement was last year sending home every person to their family safely. So on top of record financials, on top of turning all that around, the improvement over years of the safety and the health. I mean, health is a great story that, perhaps if you allow me just 1 second. In 2013, we had 66 people that were dying of HIV TB related deaths. Last year we had three. You know, we're saving more than 60 people's lives every year just because of our program of managing HIV and TB in the company. And so I think all around, those are some of the moments that perhaps don't hit the headlines that we're incredibly proud of. So I'm not retiring. I don't know what I'm going to be doing yet next, but I still have a huge amount of energy looking forward to my next challenges. I think it is the right time to hand over to a successor who can bring perhaps different views and different energy into Anglo Platinum. But I leave behind an incredible management team. The board's very stable and in good shape. So I think all around, this company is still really in good shape, and nothing for investors or the market to be concerned about that I'm stepping down.
Perhaps Chris Griffith as the head of a hydrogen fuel cell startup. Who knows where you might pop up next, Chris. You did also very famously clash with former Mines Minister Susan Chibangu, who reacted quite angrily to your plans to cut 400,000 ounces and potentially 14,000 jobs. You went ahead anyway. So it's a difficult environment in which to operate. You do good things, but you do so against a sometimes antagonistic social partner in government. What advice would you have for the person who takes over?
Michael, so look, I don't hold it against the government to put pressure on business not to just retrench jobs for at the drop of a hat. You know, I think it is government's role to try and look after as many people and keep them employed as much as they can. But having said that, ultimately businesses must do what is right to be profitable. It's only when a company is profitable that it can pay taxes and can pay royalties. And it's only under those circumstances can you have economic growth. So I don't hold anything against either the minister or the government for putting pressure on us to make sure we absolutely, only at the last resort, were shedding jobs. But I think we hopefully in the kind of environment now that we start seeing growth again. But I think My advice to any CEO, my advice to any board member is ultimately you've got to do what's right for the business to make it profitable. And it's under those circumstances that the country really grows because we can pay tax.
Bottom line, and that is business's role at the end of the day. Amplat CEO Chris Griffith signing off for the last time as we chat in this role is in your position as CEO of Amplat. Chris, I'd just like to say it's always been a real pleasure sharing your insights into the PGM market, into the operating environment in South Africa, which can be a tricky one, and chapeau on signing off on such a high. Take care.
Thank you very much, Michael.
Let's cross now to Anne Williams, who's standing patiently by with the news.